going into the NFL draft, Kyler Murray went number one overall, like you two predicted. Mm-hmm. I was the naysayer that says the Cardinals should not have drafted a quarterback when they have Josh Rosen, and I think Josh Rosen is a much better quarterback than Kyler Murray, and we'll get into that a little bit later. But I guess the whole Cardinals just debacle that is Cliff Kingsbury and now Kyler Murray. It's just such an interesting.
Debacle?
Yeah, I mean, well, like yeah, they're the problem.
Cliff Kingsbury is the problem. The problem.
Guy just showed up. It's a fiasco.
Kyler showed
up.
Fiasco is a better way to put it.
It's a debacle. That's a synonym of debacle is fiasco.
Is it? I'm gonna
go look it up. Here's my thing, right? They're hiring. This is why it's a whole debacle. Because you're hiring coach.
Right.
I am right.
First synonym on Google.
What's the definition of debacle, though? Because synonyms mean they have overlapping.
Yeah, you're right. Definitely a sudden or you know, a failure.
Yeah, right? Cliff Kingsbury is not a failure.
He is a failure. Okay. He is a failure. Kyler Murray, not so much. But the fact that he is starting over Josh Rosen for the Arizona Cardinals a year after they drafted Josh Rosen for a coach that has a sub-500 record in the NCAA and doesn't have any NFL experience whatsoever.
Okay.
He only has played in the NFL. He has no NFL coaching experience whatsoever, and he's a head coach.
Right, you can be projecting this to be a failure. In fact, it sounds like you're projecting
it to be
a train wreck, but it's not yet a failure. They haven't done anything yet.
All right, you know what? It's a failure in the eyes of the Arizona Cardinals management.
That I can agree with.
Because
I can see
you,
that.
Yes. Okay, so let me rephrase myself. Right. It's a debacle of the management and how they've handled their whole team and trying to develop this college-like offense, bringing it to the NFL with a coach who has no experience whatsoever, with a quarterback who some say probably won't last that long in the league, and they got rid of a very talented young quarterback that has potential, and instead they opted to try to go for the run and gun, and it just doesn't make sense to me.
But that's the wave, though. That's the new wave of the NFL and what's worked.
Okay, but if you do that, you hire a coach that has some sort of experience in the NFL. This is Cliff Kingsbury.
I don't know that I necessarily agree.
Okay, even then, but you would get a winning coach.
Well, so here's the thing. If you're going to introduce somebody into the NFL to bring foreign concepts, foreign as far as NFL versus college, I think there's something to be said for somebody who hasn't been jaded by working in the NFL before. It's a brand new perspective, a fresh perspective that is going to be fully raw, and he'll be able to adapt regardless of the situation.
Is he going to be able to adapt? Well, he's 35-40 in the NCAA.
You can't necessarily say he will
for Texas A&M.
But he has the opportunity to.
Or Texas
Tech. And I've mentioned this before on the show. Kingsbury giving him the keys to the franchise and turning your back would be dangerous. But as long as there's oversight in the hiring process they've put together to fully flesh out his staff, then I think that if they fill that with NFL veterans on a coaching side, they can have a very successful team. This is a little bit of a mad scientist experiment, and we're going to see what happens. This might not be the answer, but it might set a precedent for what's possible in the NFL. It might not be a complete and total failure, and it might be a success. And
with 2 years of Pat Mahomes, he couldn't even finish with a positive record.
Well, he can't coach defense. That's the answer. I mean, he can coach offense, no question. So he was successful in the production he got out of Patrick Mahomes. They're bringing him in to be an offensive guy. So when I say if you can fill out that staff with the right guys on the defensive side,
right? And they
I'm sorry.
Hired
so
Vance
then you
Joseph.
Hire him.
Right. They hired Vance Joseph, who is a known defensive guy.
So
he's a former head coach.
But why are you bringing in Cliff Kingsbury to be the head coach when he hasn't even been an offensive coordinator?
Because it's
fresh air. You are buying into this idea that this offense is going to work, and if it doesn't, it is going to fail miserably.
Sure,
they're
going
to have to
experiment.
Blow up the whole entire roster.
Their roster is already blown up.
They have David Johnson. They have Larry Fitzgerald.
Fitzgerald's retiring
Josh
in a year, and Johnson
they
is reaching 30
Christian
soon.
Kirk.
So that's the threshold.
They have the potential to be a good team.
I think it's a stretch, right? David Johnson had a horrible year last year. Fitzgerald is old and ready to retire. Christian Kirk was a nice surprise right out of the draft, but it was his rookie season, and he's a little undersized still. That was
David
the
Johnson almost ran for 1,000 yards,
and he was not productive last year. He took a lot of carries.
Because they had their offense wasn't fully developed. Right, so you bring in Cliff Kingsbury, right? You bring in this offensive-minded coach who is your offensive coordinator. You have Vance Joseph lead your whole team, so then he handles the defense. You give Cliff Kingsbury the key to the offense,
and here's where I disagree. If you give Vance Joseph the keys to the franchise as a head coach, what you're doing, again, is you're having these NFL histories, philosophies that have developed that haven't been that successful, which is why Vance Joseph is now in the role of defensive coordinator, because as a head coach, he hasn't been all that successful.
Right, but you can bring him and have him as your puppet.
And allowing that, you can't, why bring him in as a puppet?
It's not a puppet. Then
it's all PR at that point.
Yeah, you can thrust someone into a position in which they may or may not succeed, and that's not a life or death scenario.
It's absolutely ridiculous. You bring in a head coach with no experience whatsoever. This guy has never given success in the NCAA, right? I understand, he's great at the offense, but you bring in a guy, you bring Cliff Kingsbury in, make him offensive coordinator, you bring in whoever you want, you make your head coach. I don't even care who it is. But if it doesn't work, then the franchise doesn't get looked on as like, this is all Cliff Kingsbury's fault, blah, blah, blah. If the offense is productive, then you move him up and you fire the coach. It's a different story. You've got to groom this guy who has no experience.
I'm not saying that he's Sean McVay. But
he's not close to Sean McVay.
I'm not saying he is. But just consider the difference between Sean McVay before he was a head coach and as a head coach. The amount of power you have in a creative perspective as a head coach that's not restricted by the powers that be above, i.e. a head coach when you're an assistant, is a huge difference. Otherwise, we would have seen Sean McVay's teams putting up the same kind of numbers that the Rams do. It's a matter of having the power to make those calls and not have any oversight restricting what you can and can't do. Now, my thought process is, remember what James Winston used to say at Florida State? Oh, it's the Florida State saying Winston.
What did he say, Ryan?
At Florida State, if we going to do it, then we do it big. If you're going to do this, do it. If you're going to hire a guy from college to bring in a college offense to your team,
don't make him the puppet.
Don't make any puppets. Don't restrict him. Let this man run wild.
It's a joke that he's in the NFL.
If it crashes and burns, you get the first pick again, and you just start over. And if it works great, well, then you're genius for it. And I hope, because I believe in it, at least to some degree, and I believe in Kyler Murray, I hope that you're proven very wrong, Charlie.
I think it's a joke.
Is this episode recording?
Yes.
Good. Just making sure.
It's a joke.
I'm going to see
you freezing
cold takes.
The road?
Yeah, this is a great
I just don't think he's
successful.
You're buying into this whole idea that you're hoping that Kyler Murray is going to stay healthy and be able to handle the physicality that comes with the NFL, which is already the
first. Exactly, you have to buy into it.
Which is already the first question mark. Then you bring in a head coach who has no experience whatsoever. It's like if I just started teaching college kids journalism. I have no experience whatsoever.
Yeah, it's
all
an
I've
experiment.
Done is vote for the Daily Orange, and now all of a sudden
I'm
going to be teaching.
For all that matters,
I
think you would be
professor.
A great professor.
I don't know about that.
I don't know. I'm
I
just
think
saying.
He'd be.
You're an emphatic person. This makes the point exactly like I believe it in what Ryan was saying. You have to have trust in people. Sometimes, it's why during a hiring process, which we're all going through right now, sadly, that they want to get younger people in over people who have been bouncing around job to job to job. It's like you want
they
to bring fresh ideas. You want to bring fresh faces, new people into positions where they can bring fresh air.
Every radio host, they have experience elsewhere before going to ESPN.
Okay, well,
Fox
that's
Sports
just
one
out of the industry. Womb.
He wasn't
industry.
Born yesterday. He was coaching in college. It's not like the guy.
He
just
was coaching
like
in college to a
scene.
35-40 record. He coached for four or five years.
But I don't understand why you can't look at this with any sort of gray area and nuance. Obviously, the man can coach offense. And obviously, teams that can play good enough defense are coaches that can coach good enough defense are plentiful in the NFL. It's issues with getting your offense to move successfully on a week-to-week basis and put up points. That's the hardest thing to do in the NFL.
And that's what they were unable to do the past season.
If they can bring in a guy who can do that on offense – and then coaching and build that coaching staff
so
as they
the
have
same
around
exact
their defense.
Thing the other way by getting a reputable head coach and making sure that Cliff Kingsbury doesn't take too much, because in a sense Cliff Kingsbury is just your puppet for the defense.
But he's not the puppet for the defense. He's an offensive minded head coach, which is fine. A lot of teams have defensive minded or offensive minded head coach.
If you don't know if he's gonna just take over and be like, I'm coaching the team. not just the offense.
Well, you would hope that they did their due diligence when they hired him.
Exactly.
It's not just
but
a blind raise.
They're not a dumb organization. No organization is dumb.
I mean, I don't know if that is not true.
Okay,
they have higher ups.
There are
vet
Ryan
people.
Snyder took over. It's Ryan Snyder, right? Dan Snyder.
There can be
Dan
dumb.
Snyder.
Okay,
Dan Snyder took over
statement.
For the first overall
Dan
pick,
Snyder
or first round pick
is
for the
dumb.
Redskins.
But there, everyone else may or may not have
just,
a little bit of mindset.
I just mentioned some kid in my house as the GM. That's bad.
There may be stupidity in that organization. They might make stupid choices. But simply understanding the motives of the person you're hiring to run your organization is HR, like, 101. I mean, I could do that job. So I think that you have to give them the respect of at least knowing how to hire a coach. Maybe not from a coaching perspective, like an X's and O's sense, but knowing whether or not this man plans to come in and perform a full mutiny and take over the staff when your expectation is that he focus on the offense. Like, those are the things that you know and you go
listen,
through.
Listen, if I'm an NFL organization, I'm not hiring Cliff Kingsbury first as a head coach. I'll make him my offensive coordinator, and if that works out, who knows? Maybe we make him the head coach.
We can
with no experience whatsoever.
Time will tell.
That's all I'm going to say, and we'll be right back on WERW, the post game. To talk a little
heated.
Bit about Josh Rosen.
We're heated.
And we're back on WRW's The Post Game, the last episode ever inside Shine Student Center in the basement in Jabberwocky Cafe.
Ever.
I'm your host, Charlie DeSterco, alongside me, AJ Gerst, Ryan Tabb. If you weren't here earlier, you missed a pretty heated segment about my opinion on Cliff Kingsbury and how he is a fraud.
Or in other words, Klingsbury.
Yes. Let's get him out. But the whole thing and part out. Of the reason why
witch
I'm
hunt.
So
it's a
heated
witch hunt.
It is
part of the reason why hunt. I'm so heated about this situation is because Josh Rosen has been treated horribly by the Arizona Cardinals.
Well, that I agree.
By everyone.
And he should never have been traded. Well, I mean, I don't think they should have taken Kyler Murray. But this everything that has happened in this past 2 weeks has just been the epitome of just how poorly run the Arizona Cardinals franchise is.
Yeah. After they took Kyler Murray, Josh Rosen decided to unfollow the Cardinals on Instagram. And Steve
Smith. Which, by the way, if I was traded and treated like this, I would unfollow him.
Oh, me too.
So let
me
say, first of all, Josh Rosen, for his entire career, has been called a punk, kind of a fraud, guy who doesn't want to work hard. He's not interested in football, et cetera, et cetera.
A bad guy. Just now, a bad guy. They call him a bad guy.
Right. He gets a lot of crap, for lack of a better word. And I grew up in a similar area to Josh Rosen, like location-wise, like we were not far away. I don't know him personally. I know people who have told me he's not the friendliest dude. He can be a douche sometimes. Does it surprise me that a guy who's a first-round NFL draft pick can be a little cocky? Not really. Am I going to take that one person had a bad experience with him and say that that's who he is as character? Absolutely not. So the evidence that I'm shown by Josh Rosen week in and week out through his career is to the contrary of what everybody wants to say.
Right. And you made a good point. When we were just casually talking about this exact sort of, not this exact scenario, but I forget in what context. Oh, it's because you're from LA and people ask you, you know, have you ever had run-ins with celebrities? And how do you feel about that? And you said, you know, it's like annoying being from LA because you have friends who kind of ingrain this image of different celebrities in your head,
right?
Based off of one experience with them.
Oh, I went to middle school with him, and he made fun of my shoe one time. And
right,
now
or
he's
like,
a horrible person.
Yeah, my girlfriend like went to a party with him, and like he was like a little rude to her.
Yeah, and then they just decide that they're a horrible person. That's exactly.
Yeah.
So that's been my experience with Josh Rosen. I think he gets that everywhere he goes because there's already a reputation that follows him. So he unfollows the Cardinals. Steve Smith essentially attacks his character, saying he doesn't have a work ethic. They're going to ship his behind down to somewhere else where he can cry about it. And I don't think it's crying to unfollow the team, right? He said, you should come in there and want to compete for your job. Well, newsflash, Steve. One, he doesn't have that job anymore. The Cardinals aren't letting him compete. They traded him. Two, you don't draft a guy first overall to compete. And third, if you look at what happened that day, the day they drafted Kyler Murray, I believe that the Instagram for the Cardinals posted 8 Instagrams about him. And within the next 3 days, up until 1 a.m. last night when I checked last, and it was 9 the first day, they have posted 15 Instagram posts about Kyler Murray. Why would you want to see that if you're Josh Rosen? How he responded to that? He made a video thanking Arizona for their time. He went to Larry Fitzgerald's celebrity softball tournament, and he offered to sell Kyler Murray his apartment. In what way is this guy being a bad guy?
No, I thought that video was actually really cool. How
it was
Rosen,
corny.
No, I don't even know if it was corny.
I don't mind it. It was just corny.
It was just him. Right. It was him. It was him being a good guy throughout it. You know, thanking Arizona, the organization, everything throughout all the BS that he had to put up with their organization, and then, you know, offering Kyler the best of luck and literally saying, "I know a great 2-bedroom apartment coming available in Scottsdale that I would love to show you." You know, literally,
I'm sure I can get you a good price.
Right. I'm sure he can get you a good price. I just thought that, you know, that's a class move for a guy that everyone throughout his entire career, not just at UCLA, but also, you know, obviously in his brief stint in Arizona, have kind of just labeled him as this guy who is, you know, low work ethic, someone who is not going to be able to lead a franchise into their glory days, someone who is a below average quarterback, and they just slander him left and right. And he still has a lot to prove, in my opinion.
Yeah.
He's a 1 year. He's been in the league for 1 year. He's a 1 year guy. He can turn this around. It's not, he was working with nothing. Yeah, practically
Miami,
nothing.
Miami is a good spot for him to end up.
Miami is a great spot for him to end up. And I wish him the best. And I think that he will eventually succeed. It's just for a guy like him, you can't expect, no matter who it is, it doesn't matter if you go number one overall, whatever, you can't expect them to, say, lead you to the playoffs in their first season or be a franchise type of quarterback after 1 year. That is not what the NFL is. And if you take a look back in history at the greatest quarterbacks ever in their first season, Tom Brady didn't even play, first of all. Peyton Manning was subpar.
Aaron Rodgers
was on the bench.
Tom Brady didn't play for.
Yeah, that was the.
That's what I mean.
Said, yeah.
It's like the greatest quarterbacks in the NFL, the franchise quarterbacks. One season doesn't mean jack. You know what? It doesn't matter. What matters is how they build off of that failure and turn that around into success. And in this case, the Cardinals didn't give him the chance to succeed, which I guess I don't blame them, but
right,
regardless,
they didn't wrong him, but they didn't put him
regardless
in the right
situation. In this entire scenario of people hating on Josh Rosen, saying that this guy sucks, like he'll never be a good quarterback in the NFL, I think it's BS.
I think the tables are turning, the tides are turning a little bit on people's feelings for Josh Rosen because of the way he's been crucified so badly in the last week or so. I think more and more people are starting to think, well, wait a second, I kind of want this guy to succeed now. Why is everybody ragging on him? So it's nice to see that at least. And there's no guarantees he'll be great, but I think he has the opportunity to be. And so, for that, it doesn't make a lot of sense why Steve Smith would attack his character in such a way. I don't mind, Charlie, we talked about this before the show, I don't mind a hot take here and there, right? Because that's part of the nature of the industry. When your hot take is reflective of your own character and your own opinions on something, by all means, you say what you want to say. But when your hot take is a reflection of somebody else's character and you talking about who they are, mm-hmm. I think Steve Smith owes Josh Rosen an apology.
Right. And we don't know their relationship and
no,
to
we
what
don't.
Extent
that's
it
true.
Is and if they are friends or if they do have knowledge of each other. But I mean, the NFL draft has seen a lot of surprises, and obviously Steve Smith was being the analyst for that, and then we talked a little bit about Kyler Murray and the Josh Rosen effect. But how about them Giants? With the 6th overall pick, they took Daniel Jones out of Duke. And I bet a lot of people are wondering, who?
Well, I'll tell you what. On Tab's Takes on WERW last Wednesday, I went in on the Giants before the pick in my draft preview, essentially saying that if they take, assuming that Murray's off the board at 1, if the Giants take a quarterback in this draft and it's not a late-round pick and it's not Dwayne Haskins at 6, then they're making a grave mistake. And they did exactly that.
Right.
I believe they made a horrible mistake.
If I'm the Giants, I'm taking Josh Allen at 6 because there is no quarterback in this draft that I think is going to be competent in the NFL.
Right. If you're filling needs, you don't draft a quarterback if you're this Giants team. And if you are, you have to take Haskins at 6. He was on the board.
Yes.
I would have taken
Haskins
Greer
dropped
him.
To double digits. Like the, right. it was laughable that the Giants took Daniel Jones at 6 when they could have easily had waited another year, probably ended up around the 1-10 range and be able to trade up or even get one of the guys like Tua or the Oregon quarterback who I'm blanking on his name right now, but like Herbert. So like the Giants could have had the opportunity to get a better quarterback next year because you already know they're going to use Eli for another
right.
2 to 3 years. They're not getting rid of it, but instead Dave Gettleman shows that he is just probably the worst GM in
he's
probably the worst
away
GM
and
in
let their talent walk and then drafted whatever you want to call this a risk. I call it a failure to this point. I would call it a projected failure.
Right. There is no Landon Collins. There is no Odell Beckham Jr. there is just no intelligence in Dave Gettleman. I mean, did you see the? Did you see the? See his response? Did you see after the draft? He goes talking about Daniel Jones and the whole pick and all of that. And he goes, for me, it's been a while, very frankly. I loved him, Daniel Jones, on film. And then I went to see him in the Senior Bowl. So the first Senior time he's MVP. Ever seen him live, hold on, the first time he's ever seen him live was the Senior Bowl. Now, mind you, he won the MVP, and the last two Senior Bowl MVPs were also picked by the Giants.
Exactly.
They Kyle Loletta, and then I forgot the guy before that. But the last three Senior Bowl MVPs have been Giants, and none of them are good. But I had gone to see Dwayne Haskins at Ohio State. I had seen Kyler Murray and Will Greer play each other. I had seen Dwayne play in the Big 12. Is that the Big 12 anymore? Ohio State's in the Big 10.
Yeah.
It is just absolutely ridiculous, and he goes, it just doesn't make sense. I mean, he goes on, and he's just like, and frankly, when he walked out there as Daniel Jones, I saw a professional quarterback. After the three series that I watched, I saw a professional quarterback. Right. So that's when I fell in full bloom love. So that is your GM, the New York Giants, that has seen three drives of Daniel Jones. Didn't watch him in college, right? I watched him at Duke. I watched him in the bowl game. He's a decent quarterback. He's got a decent arm. He's pretty intelligent. He's an athletic guy. I mean, he's got the body of like an Eli Manning.
Well, so that's it, right?
And
there.
That's what it is, right? Is that
they want an Eli?
They want Eli 2.0.
It's not this even is, just
I
that.
Saw I saw a really good tweet before you get into it. I saw a really good tweet that pretty much said Daniel Jones looks like the guy who would play Eli Manning in a movie about Peyton Manning.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. That's exactly right.
And that's exactly right. He literally looks like Eli Manning.
But not in Eli's movie.
No, not in Eli's movie, in Peyton's movie. And that, I think, kind of played into that. As much as they would never, ever want to admit it, I think that they want their next Eli.
Yeah, because they do.
It 100%
that's the same reason
is.
They won't let go of this Eli. But listen, NFL teams, well, stupid NFL teams, of which the Giants fall into that category, love to play the game. Oh, if it looks like a duck, walks like a duck, quacks like a duck, etc. They always say, if it looks like a quarterback,
then it must be a quarterback.
Right, if he looks like a good quarterback, he's a good quarterback. Let me ask you this. Are you asking whether or not he plays like a good quarterback? He can look like a good quarterback.
Josh
if he doesn't
Allen.
Play like a good quarterback, he's he not going to be good a good
in
quarterback.
Shorts.
Right? Exactly.
Big hands.
So they have this expectation that, oh, this guy had so much potential, and for some reason he couldn't take advantage of that in college, but he's going to come to the pros now, and that's where he's going to be successful.
Right. He didn't have a bad season. I mean, he had 22 touchdowns, 9 interceptions, which is a little bit alarming. That is a 9 in the ACC.
Yeah, for the 6th overall pick, the guy pretty much had a 2-1
yes.
touchdown interception
right.
ratio.
I mean, the reason that they took him at 6 was because they consulted the Mannings. The Mannings liked him. They see the next Eli in him.
I wonder
and
if
then
the Mannings like him because he's not going to take the Mannings job. Think about that. Could if I was be. Eli, I'd
I mean,
like
he,
the guy
he,
who's
he
not
very much
my job.
I mean, Tom McShay said it best. It is Eli Manning 2.0, but when you look at him, he has the physical skills and the arm strength and all of that you need to be a quarterback, but he doesn't have the intelligence.
Right, but even if you think about Eli as the career arc he's had, his lowest lows as an individual have been lower than his highest highs individually. Team success is a different story. But the worst seasons of his career have far outweighed, on an individual level, the best seasons of his career.
Horrible.
So I don't understand why you're looking
for
that
guy. He threw 27 interceptions in 2013.
Right. So if you're telling me that you're looking for that next guy, why don't you look for somebody better? And if you put a lot of quarterbacks in the situations—
And not a carbon copy.
Right. Instead of a carbon copy, upgrade. Why is it an attachment to the past that's allowing them to dictate their future?
I just don't know why they drafted a quarterback. Like you clearly are going with Eli Manning for 2 to 3 years. You made that abundantly clear when you got rid of Odell. You're not trying to compete right now.
Right.
Or take
Haskins if you want a quarterback.
Yes. But like, I would have rather Josh Allen bolster the defense where the
right.
Giants need help.
Right. I also would have
and then
no problem
the next
with that.
Year. You would have made a different decision, right? And that's also because Josh Allen fell. Like, no one saw Farrell getting drafted by the Raiders at 4 or 5.
If you wanted to gamble on
whatever, he was drafted like right before Daniel Jones, and he basically the Raiders' grave mistake of drafting him, who was a guy that was projected as a mid to late first round pick, and he ends up going in the top 5, and then it gets completely overshadowed by Daniel Jones. You know there's something wrong with that pick.
Well,
there.
Yeah, for me, right, my quarterback rankings were Kyler Murray 1, 2 I had Dwayne Haskins, And then three, I had Will Grier, even before.
See, I would not have taken Will Grier.
But that's fine. I'm not saying Will Grier was worthy of going at six. I think nobody after that was worthy of going in the first round.
Drew Lock.
The issue is that in the NFL, simply being a quarterback ups your draft stock, right? So teams need quarterbacks. They get desperate, and they say, well, he's the best quarterback in the draft. Therefore, he must be the first pick of the draft. We saw it with Jared Goff. Well, Jared Goff was not the single best player in that year's draft, but he was a quarterback, so he went number one overall. It's this idea that you need to find your quarterback immediately, and so if there is a quarterback who's competent in any way, you take him as soon as possible. I think that's wrong. If you're going to gamble on a guy, I would have even rather gambled on Tyree Jackson out of Buffalo. Now, I don't think Tyree Jackson's going to be good in the NFL. I don't. But I don't think any of these guys are. So for that reason, I think I would rather gamble on the guy with the higher ceiling. Tyree Jackson is huge. He's got a cannon for an arm, and he can't throw an accurate ball for the life of him. But I would hope that if you're going to try and build a guy up who didn't have that much college success, it's the guy with these raw skills to be successful and hone in on that
accuracy.
Right,
and Buffalo signed him after the draft, which is a great move.
Right.
You don't know. I mean, two big guys that weren't in the big Power 5 conferences in the NFL, and you'll see what you can get. And I like Tyree Jackson a lot too, but I mean, that's
if you're
going to
gamble,
I love
that's
Maction.
The gamble.
Yes, you get the guy with the skill, the raw skills that you can fine tune.
Right.
And the Giants just kind of made that mistake there. One thing I want to say before we cut the break here,
for sure,
the New England Patriots getting N'Keal Harry at 32.
Oh, I don't want to hear it. Okay, not that N'Keal Harry is not good, but
not that.
It's just every time the Patriots draft a receiver, all their fans, yeah, I've been watching this guy for a few years now.
See,
He was on my fantasy team. Really high on him.
I love N'Keal Harry though.
He was on my fantasy team for college football.
I and I'm not saying you individually, either of you guys, right? Like as a Pac-12 guy, right? I too know who he is, but for a lot of these guys in New England who never stay up late enough to catch the Pac-12 after dark, they're going to tell you they watched a lot of N'Keal Harry, and they did not. And I just hate this mindset.
I think he's a good wide receiver.
Right, I think he's
a great receiver.
This is not a criticism.
6'4",
this is not a criticism of N'Keal
pounds.
Harry or the Patriots. This is a criticism of the fans and how they're going to respond to having him.
So
it must be a hidden gem because the Patriots did it, and he's from a minor conference, the Pac-12. Like, that's what they're going to talk about it too, because that's how the East Coast views
and
the
Pac-12. To kind of go off what you said, The day of the draft, Thursday, we had our formal, our fraternity formal. So, like, not a lot of us were watching the NFL draft.
Dude,
I was streaming it on my phone.
You talking about your fraternity on your, like, mediums that you did in the Daily Orange. You did your final article, right, was about your fraternity. Now you're on your final show here talking about your fraternity. We get it. You're in fraternity, bud.
We get it.
Yeah. Coming from the kid that talks the most about it outside.
You're in a fraternity.
Derby days. But anyway.
Roasted.
So we didn't watch, and then The Pats draft N'Keal Harry, and all the Pats fans just erupt, and they found out about 15 minutes after he had been drafted, and they go crazy like, this guy's sick. Wait, what team does he play for? And I was
like,
you gotta be kidding
me, man.
That's
what I'm saying. They all think that.
And
they...
I was like, maybe just like the fun night like took a toll on them, and they just are going crazy for no reason. But I mean, I like him. He's a tall,
right? No, he's
athletic receiver that scores a lot of touchdowns, is going to be an end zone threat, and he's going to be really good.
Which is something that they've, with the loss of Gronkowski, they're going to be able to shift that red zone threat to the receiver position, which if you don't like any of the tight ends in this draft, I think that that's a great opportunity to do that and get somebody who's a big threat. If you know who he is, then I have no problem with you saying he's good. I just think because he is kind of a more under the radar guy in this draft, Patriots fans are going to come out and say that they've been watching him
while we're still on the topic of wide receivers,
where is he going?
How about that wide receiver that fell off of his top 15 projection all the way down to 25? Hollywood Brown, baby.
I love him too.
I think the quickest receiver that we've seen in a draft since maybe his cousin Antonio Brown.
So here's the problem.
I think it's an issue.
I want the Jets to get him.
I don't think they should have been
really
allowed
good.
To draft him. Solely on the
now
basis.
Now his career is going to be over.
No, he goes
to Baltimore.
Solely on the basis.
Rashard Perriman.
Let's just rag on all the first round.
No. I'm not ragging on the Ravens at all.
I am.
I don't think any team.
I know you are.
I think Hollywood Brown shouldn't have been allowed to be drafted by any franchise because That franchise should have had to draft. The NFL Network should have had to draft Gus Johnson. I don't think Hollywood Brown should be allowed to play a football game that Gus Johnson doesn't broadcast. I think that's a crime against humanity.
Okay.
All right. All year, for 2 years, screaming Hollywood Brown down
Hollywood
the sidelines.
Brown.
Oh, it was so much fun to listen to.
Hollywood.
College basketball, college football, but we get CeeDee Lamb now to take his place, and Gus Johnson's going to be on the call for a lot of those
Lamb.
Games. Man, I love CeeDee Lamb.
And T. Higgins, right?
Yeah, but I love CeeDee Lamb.
These guys
CeeDee
got
Lamb,
some good
though.
Names. But no, yeah, I love Marquise Brown. I think Hollywood's going to be a stud. I wanted the Jets to like trade down and get him at like 15 to 20, but sadly they did not because they took Quinnen Williams, which I think is
a great pick.
Right?
Yeah, I mean,
there was
Quinnen over.
Would you have taken Quinnen over Nick Bosa if both were available?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, I would have too. So I was just curious.
I think Quinnen's skill set is more rare.
Right.
For that reason,
and he's a football guy, and he sneezes and says, bless you, to himself, and then thanks himself.
Yes.
So that's a good segue.
Which I think is funny. Like most people, just I'll wrap it up quick, but just most people, like, what if you hear that, you think he did it to be funny? Like, he legitimately just did that. Like, I don't even think he realized he did it till people pointed it out afterwards, which makes it all that much more wholesome.
Right.
So bless yourself.
Thank you. We'll be right back on WW to talk a little bit NBA before getting into a little segment that AJ requested, and we kind of don't know what to expect.
We're in for a surprise.
So we'll be right back. And we're back. Our last segment here on WW's post game, well, last 18-minute segment before we get into everything. I'm your host, Charlie DeSterco, alongside Ryan Tabb and AJ Gersh, and we're in the middle of the NBA playoffs, baby. But the Houston Rockets may have gotten robbed. Have you seen what has happened recently? Stephen Curry should have fouled out. Klay Thompson has mauled James Harden on about 3 to 5 different 3-point shots, and none of those calls were made.
Well, so the league officially admitted today that they missed multiple calls, one of which. And then the follow-up one also, which should have led to Stephen Curry's ejection. Well, not ejection, fouling out.
Correct, which
is a form of ejection, I guess. But he should have fouled out, and he ended up hitting the go-ahead shot after he should have fouled that about 30 seconds later. So there was a lot that went on in the game as a result of the refereeing. Now, my biggest thing is, right, James Harden goes up in the press conference. He says he wants a fair shot. The immediate social media response, at the very least, is, how can this guy complain about not getting free throws? Well, let me tell you, it's not binary. It's not that because you get the benefit of some calls, you shouldn't be allowed to ask for the benefit on others. The referee should referee to the book every time. If that takes away from James Harden's opportunities in situations where he's in the wrong, then so be it. But that doesn't mean that because he gets some leeway in one area, he shouldn't get it in the other area.
You're paid to referee a game
to the book.
As a, you know, us in the media were often called the neutral arbiters, the non-biased neutral arbiters of you know, news. Referees in their own field are the non-biased neutral arbiters of the game.
Right.
They are paid to ref a game by the rules that they probably went to school like we did
to learn.
And they have not done that so far. And it just came out with this crazy stat that you just showed me from last year's Game 7.
So the Rockets have been putting together this analytics package to show to the league. They're using analytics to show how many points they were robbed of in Game 7.
It was roughly, 19 points in Game 7 almost?
19.6 points on 81 missed calls or non-calls that were robbed.
Wild. And that just to me, that's the problem not only with the NBA, but also with referees in every sport, in my opinion, is that you're calling these calls, you know, sometimes as a makeup call, or sometimes you're not doing something by the book because you messed up, you missed something, you need to go back and return the favor, or you're reffing to the home crowd advantage, or whatever it may be. If you aren't refereeing by the book for, you know, as that neutral arbiter, you're doing it wrong. You're not doing your job.
And you can make mistakes. There's nothing wrong with making mistakes, right? I'm not blaming referees individually for not being computers, for not being robots who get it right every time. But when you
come into
the game,
exactly.
When you come into the game, though, and set a precedent that this is how you're calling the game, it's not about how you call the game. It's how the game is meant to be called. You call it to the book, you make mistakes, it's fine. But if you're going to say, this is my playoff game, and I'm going to allow them to close out this way, that's not how it works.
And the same goes for umpires in baseball as well. You know, there are specific umpires who have a reputation, home plate umpires specifically, who have a reputation for calling a larger or a smaller strike zone. And that, to me, is something that is absolutely ludicrous. If you can have a guy coming into a game and saying, okay, this strike zone is going to be bigger because we know that whoever, Joe whatever his name is going to be behind the plate. That's not how the job works. As a referee,
as an
umpire.
Are you trying to say that there should be a like standardized robot umpire?
No, what I'm saying
I mean,
is that
it's all
sure,
part of
human
perception.
Human perception, but you shouldn't be able to know that if Angel Hernandez is behind the plate, he's going to call a bigger strike zone.
Oh, well, in baseball, I do believe there should be a robot umpire because it's very simple, at least for balls and strikes. Like ESPN shows us after every pitch.
But the thing is, like,
ESPN shows us after every pitch.
Sports are great. All right, so I disagree here because I think sports.
Oh, if you
and
say what I think you're about to say,
baseball are great because there is a slight human error.
Boom! I knew you were going to say that.
I know you were going to say that. We talk about this all the time.
Let me tell you.
Hold on, I'm not done with my point yet. Right? If we had this grid of just balls and strikes, there would be so many walks in Major League Baseball because the ones that are just outside that are called strikes that are just like that are just barely on the corner, and then you call it a ball or a strike. It changes the whole just way the game is supposed to be progressed.
I'm going to respond to the second part first. The second part of not being able to pitch strikes anymore because of the size of the strike zone, if it was accurate. If the necessity...
I'm just saying it's going to be harder because there is
right, if
higher
there's
pitches,
an increase
lower
in,
pitches,
if there's
inside,
an increase
outside.
In walks as a result of that, expand the strike zone a couple inches. I don't have a problem
okay,
with that.
So
let's
then,
get it right.
Okay.
But... Because I don't want it to impact the game in a negative way. Don't get me wrong. It should be for the benefit of the game. If the rules are too restrictive that athletes can't perform within them, then you can change the rules. But let's get the rules right, and let's accurately call them. Now, I agree. Human error is a major element, if not the most important element in all professional sports, all amateur sports,
right.
and sports in general. Human error is what means that not the better, more talented team wins every time. Human error is meant to be on the part of the players and the coaches, not the referees. The umpires are supposed to get it right every single time. Their error is not supposed to influence the game. So when players come out and do what they're supposed to do and perform at the level they're supposed to perform at, their talent and their lack of errors dictate the outcome of the game, not the referees and the umpires. So mistakes should be made on the part of the players and coaches, on the part of management, not on the part of referees.
I think when it comes to the MLB, the umpire behind the plate, there should be allowance for slight human error when it goes on and off.
How does that benefit the
game? Because you're not going to be able to see a square box. You need to allow for
it. I don't blame them for getting
it
wrong.
You want robot umps.
I don't blame them for getting it wrong.
Which I think is just not...
But what's the problem with the robot ump? Not robot umps.
It just makes the whole
game
artificial.
It's not artificial. We have a very clear answer. They use it in tennis.
It's a striking ball. I kind of...
tennis, it works perfectly in tennis. The ball was either in or out. And there's no problems with that. How would that be problematic in baseball? You either throw a pitch or a strike, or sorry, a ball or a strike. You either watch a ball or take a strike. Like, it happened.
I mean, it'll never happen
because
it's a hypothetical that will never happen.
But why write? It should happen. I think it will.
I think the game just like will change and for the worse. And we already have a baseball problem, and the viewership is not like it is for the NBA or NFL. And when you change this, and maybe you incorporate more walks, or you change the pace of play, it's going to be completely different because guys are swinging at garbage pitches because they're all emphasizing home runs. And if you strike out, you strike out. They're emphasizing more home run hitters. If they just take that completely away and just don't even swing, a lot of guys, as long as they don't throw fastballs, are going to be off speed outside. If you could tell it's off speed, you just don't swing. And 90% of the time, it's going to be his ball.
I just don't understand.
I think it's ridiculous that you can't allow for a nice pitch that – because it's so hard to pick it all, and I think allowing for human error, even for referees, should be allowed for umpires behind the plate.
Human error,
as far as in the field,
we're getting a little far off of the discussion.
I'll wrap it up. I just want to say, a referee error is entirely appropriate, given that the goal of having them back there, given that the goal of having them back there is to ref as accurately to the rules as possible. But to say that it's positive to have those kinds of influences on the game.
Well, I'm not saying it's negative nor positive. I'm saying that if you add a robot, it's negative.
Why write the rules if you're not going to attempt to follow them as closely as possible?
They are attempting to. Why would you
have an easy answer in front of us?
Why would you use a robot?
Because
you're running around on two separate arguments here that you both feel very strongly about.
No, we're doing the same discussion right now.
He's saying we just have to agree to disagree, essentially. All I'm saying is
because you do disagree. It's just inevitable that you're going to disagree.
But this is a discussion. This is this is what we're discussing.
Now you two argue about whether or not we should agree to disagree or discuss, and then I'll be the arbiter for that, and. About that, AJ's just staring off.
I think it's a fine idea to add robots too.
No, that's completely different.
The purpose of the player
right,
is
so
to
you
be
saying
to maybe add a robot.
Are you saying
yeah,
in the
just
NBA
baseball
and NFL
is what he's saying.
No,
just the strike zone in baseball
question.
Is what he's saying.
First of all, I am saying just strike zone in baseball. I will say, in any sport, if we had the ability, right? Strike zone is pretty simple because it's simply location-based. Like it's on a two-dimensional plane. So as far as whether or not it was a ball or a strike is pretty easy for a computer to do.
Yes, but
if we had technology, and we might in 10, 15, 20, 30 years, that's fully capable of calling the entirety of an NBA game, closeouts, fouls, out of bounds, all that good stuff, then I would entirely be in favor of that. My goal is to, when we have an opportunity to take something a step further and do it more accurately when it comes to ruling,
okay, so
ruling on games, then I believe we should take that
I think
step.
It's also going to be inefficient because how are you going to, you have to relay the information that's a ball or strike to someone.
Just put a little green light that lights up right if it's ball, green if it's strike. It's really not that hard.
Then you got
to
press the button and you got to make sure because there are a lot of pitches that are so close to hitting the strike zone or not that you have to look closer
at
it.
That's what the computer's for, so you don't have to look at
it at
all.
But like it's going to take time. There's going to be error even in that.
But way less.
I don't know. I just disagree.
I can tell.
We can agree to disagree again here. AJ, since you're just sitting off in the corner all smiley and stuff, why don't you have your segment?
No, I just wanted to – I know, yeah, okay, you guys like to disagree a lot, which is what in part makes our show really fun. But before our show was made fun, we had to think about what was going to be fun for a little bit. And considering this is the last episode – I just wanted to take a little stroll down memory lane.
Oh, man.
Oh, no.
Just for a minute. Just a stroll down memory lane and tell you guys, first of all, what segments we were thinking of doing for the show, which ones eventually made it into the show and which ones didn't.
Is this like the original?
Is this like the original?
Yeah.
Doc?
Oh, yeah.
Are you
so,
on
No. So,
I'm not gonna look.
So don't
let
even
close,
look.
Let
it's let
me, close
let
my
let me just do it. All right. So obviously we have Big Man on Campus, which was
we did that for a while.
Which was our best
was
and most
segment.
Consistent segment besides the betting table since we started. And I would officially like to appoint us, the Big Men on Campus,
wow.
for our last show.
Wow.
Because we made it. We made it. Full circle.
We are the big men.
We are the big men on campus. It's been a lot of different people. It's been a lot of things. At one point, it was Pete Sala, the director of making stuff happen and construction, whatever. We did the betting table. We've done you know, movie reviews, weird and funny sports story of the week, Syracuse sports stories of the week. But here are some of the things that never made it into the show.
This is going to be interesting. I don't even remember most
of
these.
All right. So here's the Mike Tirico glasses guy of the day. an homage to the Cuse man himself. Mike Tirico glasses guy of the day never made it into the show, but I'd like to self-appoint myself as the Mike Tirico glasses guy of the day today. All right. And we did Fantasy Talk. We've done Trade Machine a couple of times.
No, I don't know if we've ever done Trade Machine.
I don't know
Machine.
If we've ever done Trade
we did,
Machine.
We did Fantasy Talk
we've
for
reviewed trades, but I don't know if we've ever fully done the Trade Machine.
Yes.
Yep. The social media athlete post of the day, we kind of did that today with Josh Rosen.
Rosen. Yeah. But yeah.
Let's coin that. Let's officially
yeah,
that
we'll,
was
we're
going to
coin the social media athlete post of the day. how about the elite few? People who aren't actually elite, but it's funny
Joe
to talk
Flacco,
about them
he could be the
like
elite.
They are. For example, Blake Bortles.
Oh, Blake Bortles. All right. He's the boat.
Is that really what we wrote?
Yes.
For
that's
example,
really what we
Blake
wrote.
Bortles.
Yep. How about this one? This one might be the most creative one of all of them. The segment is called Today and Tomorrow. and the explanation is what's happening today and what we think will result from it tomorrow.
Isn't that the whole point of our show? Isn't that literally what we do?
Okay, and then here's another
welcome to the Today and Tomorrow segment.
Right, because everything else is just today and the future, but we restrict it specifically to only tomorrow.
Just tomorrow. How about this one? This is a game. It's called The Dirty 30. Five basketball players that we picked to hit 30 points this week. You get as many points as the players you pick who get to 30 do. And one player scoring 35 times only counts as just one. One player.
What a horrible game.
What a horrible game.
We'd get like game. 1 point each.
So these are real life
ideas
that we came
up with. These are real life
ideas.
Yeah. Okay, here's another good one. Guess that voice. The host plays an athlete's voice, and other hosts have to guess who it is.
Oh, we should have done that.
That's a fun one. That's a good one.
It's tough.
That's a good one.
Unless it's like Patrick
Mahomes. You're going,
that's a good
going,
one. Yeah, pull someone up, and then we'll do it. How about land hockey? This is a whole segment where we only talk about soccer and just call it land hockey. That's all that we had for that
one.
We
were creative.
Yeah, we were really creative in doing this. I also like this one. Pick it to click it. Home run of the day. a player who's going to home run that day.
That's
like that.
That's not a
one.
Bad one, actually.
And then, how about one of us hosts and the other two go head to head in sports trivia? Creative.
Oh, that was a good one. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good idea. That's a good idea. But let me now, before we get to the voice of the athlete, you got one? You got one queued up?
I got one.
Okay,
all
right. Let's do that before I get into the next part.
Yeah.
You know, I'm happy, obviously. First of all, I'd like to thank Artie and Carol Moreno, Billy Hefter.
Can you hear this?
Yeah, I can hear it.
Faith and commitment to me. It's been a long last couple two weeks.
You know it?
No idea.
You know,
Phil Mickelson.
That is why baseball is not fun. That was Mike Trout.
Oh, there you go. All right, baseball, no fun. All right,
now let me. I'll play one that's more familiar. But all
right,
keep going.
I'm gonna keep going. So this is exactly a year ago today, right? Headliner of the show. NBA playoffs, Ryan wants to talk about Kyle Lowry's butt. And later in that show, we had our thick boy ranking. So I just wanted to go through the thick boy ranking.
This is one of our top. Before you do it.
Okay.
Let me see if I get this up.
And actually, before that minicamp, Dave, I haven't told many people this. I'm not sure it was totally within the rules, but I came back to Indianapolis 2 days.
I thought it was
Peyton too. All right, let's go through the thick boy rankings real quick. Ryan, Jared Sullinger, Bartolo Colon, Glenn Big Baby Davis, Boris Diaw, and Jamarcus Russell, with an honorable mention of Gershon the Dancing Bear.
Yes,
Yabusele. Yabusele.
Yep. Yep.
All right, Charlie. Those were really good. Those were good. Charlie, you had Bartolo. Awesome. Giancarlo Stanton, a.k.a. Mike, and then another Mike Tolbert, definitely great pick.
Yeah.
Doug Martin and Big Baby Davis. I as well had Big Baby Davis. I had Vince Wilfork, Charles Barkley before Weight Watchers.
And Charles Barkley after Weight Watchers.
Brian Windhorst, which is awesome. And Jim Tomei. A couple of other good segments that we've had throughout our time on the show. Stock up and stock down. Charlie, we did that over the summer, taking it back to NBC Sports
NBC
Washington
Sports,
post-game edition. Who's that athlete? We kind of did that voice thing, but just like with questions and stats and stuff. What about Happy Hour? You guys remember Happy Hour?
Oh, yeah.
That was
for fantasy.
It was for fantasy.
That was kind of
the
precursor to the betting table.
Exactly.
That was when our show was 4 to 5, right?
Right,
on Thursdays.
And we go right into
Because then we'd go right into Happy Hour.
Exactly. And then obviously we had buy or sell. And then last but not least, last memory I wanted to bring up is our girl, Sister Jean. She's been our biggest ongoing topic of discussion. We got the what the. What the Sister Jean. A lot of great segments that we've done and that we haven't done. I just wanted to take a stroll down memory lane before we wrapped it all up.
That was fun.
Thank you, AJ.
Yeah, thank you. That was a lot of fun.
Well, before we get off here, we're going to do a quick betting table.
Yeah, nobody's
we only got
here
a minute.
Yet. Kick us out the building.
Yes. No, we'll do it quick. We're going to do each series. I mean, so Ryan... So AJ needs to beat you by 3
for the season.
For the season,
one
for the whole
history of the betting table.
I'm out of it, so I'm just gonna pick my picks anyway. So we have
just for the fun of
Bucks Celtics.
Yep,
I'm gonna go Celtics.
Okay.
Sixers Raptors. I'm going Toronto.
Let me write these down. I gotta write these.
Denver
down.
Who? Denver Blazers.
Denver Blazers.
Is that who's next?
Yeah.
Yep.
Denver
I'm gonna go with the. Dame Lillard and the Blazers, and then the Warriors are going to be the Rockets. So
okay, all
right, now you can go AJ while Ryan writes this down.
Yeah. Okay, so I am actually going to do a little surprise pick here, considering the butt whooping that happened yesterday, and pick the Bucks to come back and beat the Celtics, and then I am going to pick the Warriors over the Rockets, as Charlie said, a little obvious pick, but I don't know. It's going to be a great series. And then I'm going to go with the Raps as well over the 76ers. And I also am going to do Dame Dalla and his rap skills, taking it to the finals of the Western Conference.
I want
to
pick a little differently
We're at 4.
But
so
it's tough to do. So I'm going to go Warriors, Blazers, Raptors, and I'm going to go Celtics. So we'll take one pick apart.
All right. Okay. There you have it. Wait, one
different.
That's it. That's
it.
Thank you forever. This is the post game. Charlie Disterko.
It's been a lot of fun.
AJ Gersh, Ryan Tabb, signing off with the best song in the world. Thank you, guys.